Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is author Jess Brailier, who has just published a wonderful children's book, Tess's Tree. Good morning, Jess, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you very much.
I have a confession to make. I read a lot of books, and I love children's books. They're just so much more fun than that boring adult stuff.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed Tess's Tree. In fact, I'm going to make sure that it gets a very good home with a niece of my wife's. So you can rest assured that this copy is going to be in the hands of a child that will truly appreciate it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who is Jess Brailier?
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. I have been in the book publishing and the writing world for more decades than I would like to admit. I've been involved with children's publishing and adult publishing, which has allowed me to work with some fantastic authors over the years. At one point, I started to think that maybe I could actually write. And I wrote quite a few adult books. I wrote quite a few nonfiction children's books, and then was lucky enough about 10 years ago to have a little anecdote shared with me that led to my writing Tess's Tree. And then I was lucky enough to have a good friend who was an illustrator illustrate it, and that was my first picture book. And then I was lucky enough to be able to publish it online, and then I was lucky enough to have a wonderful publisher decide to publish it in books. So as often happens in book publishing, the books that seem to have some success, that find their ways into eventually the hands, for example, of your niece, it does take an alignment of stars to make all that happen, and the stars have aligned around Tess's Tree.
Mm-hmm. So you have written a number of books previous.
Yes, I writing would be, to call many of them writing would be an insult to many writers. I tend to compile books. I've done, my efforts in book publishing were really around marketing, so I have an instinct to see where there should be a book on a bookshelf, and there isn't a book on that shelf, and if I can write it, I try to write it myself. So I've done a lot of collections of quotations, presidential, the wit and wisdom of U.S. presidents, and I did a teasing book about lawyers called Lawyers and Other Reptiles. I've done a hot dog cookbook called The Wiener Work, The World Awaited. And then I started doing, quite a few years ago, I had my own children's imprint as part of Penguin and published several children's nonfiction books that were sort of quite edgy. So yes, I've sort of been all over the place with the writing.
Mm. I'm going to have to look up your lawyer book.
Okay.
I have a quick aside for you. About 20 minutes ago, I got a call from a very good friend of mine who we're working together on a rather sad news story out of Florida, and he has managed to get himself in a little bit of a bind, and he just received a call from his lawyer demanding another $5,000 by next Wednesday or else.
Oh, my. Yeah, you have to look up Lawyers and Other Reptiles. It's long out of print now, but there's many copies available out there.
Oh, I'll have to pass that along to Bill. I'm sure he'll be seeking it out.
Okay.
Oh, excuse me. Tess is a real little girl, and the plot is sort of based on an actual event. In fact, what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you about that. about, again, as I said, about 10 years ago, just sort of different forces were at work in my life. The generation of folks who precede me, my parents' generation, the parents of my friends, regretfully, quite a few of them were starting to pass, and my wife and I had put our dog down, who had been with us since we had been married, and I was sort of thinking a great deal about loss. I was sitting in my office at home. I live in an old colonial home in New England, and it looks out on these very large maple trees, and my wife sort of just popped into the office and mentioned that one of her friends had a daughter named Tess, and Tess had a favorite tree which had to be taken down by her mother, and Tess was very upset about this, and decided to have a service for the tree. "Isn't that sweet?" my wife said, and walked out of the room. And I was sitting there looking out the window at the two trees, and I was thinking about people and dogs that had exited my life, and I had been thinking about the healing process of different funeral services, how people often arrive at a service and they're sobbing, and maybe 2 to 3 hours later, after some coffee and shared cake, people are laughing and hugging. And I was really quite taken with how universal that response to loss is, and how it cuts across all faiths and all cultures, that somehow, in some fashion, people get together to celebrate the loss of a life and the healing that begins at that moment. And I thought that Tess was very smart to do what she did with her tree. I really didn't know any of the details of it, but it was enough to spark the story. So I wrote the story really with no intention of having it published, that it would be something that I would just put down on paper and have it for Tess and her mother. At the same time, I had been working closely on a couple of projects, business related, with Peter Reynolds, who really is one of my favorite illustrators in all the world, and I'm not alone in that opinion. And he and I were looking for something to work on together. We just thought we should, that somehow we've been brought together. So the next time I saw Peter for lunch, I said, "I've actually written a little story, and it was really written for a young girl and her mother, and it'd be really wonderful if you might be able to illustrate it." And he looked at it, and he really was taken with it. And so he illustrated it, and he did it as what he calls a telefable. And Peter has a business that has a website, so he put this telefable called Tess's Tree on there. I'm lucky enough that my day job is I publish quite a few websites, including a very large website for children called FunBrain. I had published originally the best-selling book called The Diary of a Wimpy Kid. The author was on my staff. We were looking for a way to publish more fiction online, so we did Diary of a Wimpy Kid. It became a huge success, and then we looked for another manuscript, and I said, "Why don't we put Tess's Tree on there?" And so we put Tess's Tree on FunBrain and began to publish it there, where it started to be read by about 40,000 children a day. I know, it is really quite remarkable. Online publishing is just phenomenal. And about 4 weeks later, I got a call from an editor at Harper who said that she'd like to publish it. And Peter then, so we did take advantage of that opportunity. I was delighted that it had traveled all the way to Harper, and the desire to publish it, a little story that had started 10 years ago. Actually, Tess, the real Tess, is now a sophomore in college somewhere in Virginia. And that's how Peter actually redid the illustrations for the book. He really thought he ought to take another stab at them. I'm glad he did. I think they really, really are robust now, wonderful, and pick up very much on the spirit of the words that I was lucky enough to write one afternoon.
Has the real Tess seen this book?
I know that the real Tess's mother has. I don't know if she shared it with the real Tess. I had Tess's mother lives several hours away from us and gets together with my wife and another group of friends throughout every summer, and she was visiting this summer, and I was able to give her a copy of the book. And so, it was a long journey, but it was a delight to be able to hand it to her.
And actually, you're the second author I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks that has put together a young child's book based on a real series of events. And this gentleman based his story on his six-year-old granddaughter and a family vacation. And he was telling me that, you know, his granddaughter was just absolutely delighted. You know, she has her own book. And she took it down to the her local library. They live in a very small town. And his granddaughter gave the reading.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I thought it was just a great great story.
Yeah, no, that is. It's very nice. It's probably much better read than the grandfather. Yeah, that's wonderful.
I think Peter Reynolds has done an absolutely fabulous job with the illustrations. They fit the age group that you're aimed at so well. And I'm not in the publishing business. But what I see in many children's books is that the illustrations don't match up with the words. Not so much in content, more in style. You know, you're aiming at an age group, and if you have overly complex illustrations and simple text, it just doesn't marry. And vice versa, you know, overly complex words and simple illustrations don't work. But you seem to have found that real balance. I mean, I'm just more than impressed with Peter's work.
I'm impressed that you've picked up on that, because I do think your observation is one that I share. In the publishing world, there's often manuscripts that are purchased, and then the publisher seeks out an illustrator to go with that manuscript sometimes, which illustrator is determined by some artificial budget, and then the process also works vice versa. Whereas I think that with Peter, you have a gentleman who is an educator who not only illustrates books but also writes his own books. So he has a real, respect and sensitivity around how well illustrations and words need to work together. And Peter and I, just to, you know, it was part of why we kept saying to each other, we need to work together, because we thought if we found the right story, the right project, that we would click, that there would be common ground. And I think that, you know, the minute Peter read this, he said, I got to do this. And I think that's reflected in the response. The book has received a couple of nice reviews, and I think they speak very nicely to Peter's illustrations. I'll just quickly, here's one from Publishers Weekly, which is obviously an industry journal.
Right.
It says, Reynolds' spare, emotive illustrations illuminate the story's messages about cycles of life and the importance of mourning. And then there's a publication called Kirkus Reviews, which is often used by libraries to determine which books they might purchase. And Kirkus says of Reynolds' work, his soft watercolor vignettes extend a quiet story. Wispy lines portray a subtle vulnerability. Washes of muted blue effectively provide emotional depth as Tess survives grief's powerful storm. And so it's really nice to see, you know, reviewers also connecting with what Peter's done.
Oh, I have nothing but praise for the man. And, you know, the next time you talk with him, please let him know that, you know, I'm a big fan.
I will do that.
You mentioned that Harper contacted you. I mean, you must have the luck of the Irish. I mean, I can name 100 authors that I've talked to this year, you know, that would give their right arm to be on a HarperCollins imprint.
Right. Well, I think, I did not have to give my right arm or my left arm. It just happened, and I'm very lucky in that way. Yeah, Harper's this extraordinary publisher, and it's always important, in my experience, as both an author and a publisher, What's really very important that there be passion for a book. A book can be published well by one house, it can be published much better by another house, and it's just sort of a matter of passion. Some people see a book and they really want to do it, and that can passion can come from the editorial staff at a house or the sales staff, and at Harper. There's an immense amount of passion for this. I think obviously the success of the story already in its online edition, success being measured by the number of kids who are reading it, was intriguing to Harper, and also that it had Peter as the illustrator is certainly intriguing to Harper. So you call it the luck of the Irish, I call it stars align, and the stars have aligned wonderfully so around the story from the very get-go. So it's exciting.
One of the absolute keys in a successful children's book is that as an author, you really have to appeal to two different mindsets. You need the educational value, which is going to drag in the parent.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need the entertainment value that is going to engage the child. And I think you have created an excellent book in Tess's Tree. And it's a book that parents can use in a couple of different fashions. All right? No one likes to think of death, but death does happen. You know, grandparents, parents, even siblings. And I think that you could really use this as a tool to teach some very, very complex concepts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree, and I don't. I'm no real expert at this. I can just speak to Tess's Tree, and I really, as I said, I wrote this from my heart. I just first wrote a story. I thought it was just a wonderful story that Tess had done this for her tree. I think, in the context of where I was at that time, with some loss in my life, as I wrote it, I think that it obviously was speaking to a lot of the feelings that I had. I think that it appeals, I think, almost all good children's books, programming of most any sort for children, appeals both to adults and to children. Everyone has suffered loss, and I think this connects with adults as much as it does with kids. There's a couple moments in the story where people tend to have their eyes get a little bit wet, and I get that from adults, and some moment will touch them. I actually have an email link that comes to me from the online edition of the book, which continues to stay online, and I get a lot of emails, and the emails, you can tell who's experienced loss and who hasn't. I mean, obviously all adults have, but you start to hear from kids, and they'll mention the loss of a dog or the loss of their own tree or the loss of a grandparent, and I think this is really one of the wonderful things about the book is that because it's a tree, it's not quite so clinical as a dog or a grandmother. You sort of touch the same emotions and the same grieving process, but it's not quite so cold-hearted. And I think for kids, it must be quite frightening to be around loss because it's the first time that they have those feelings. They're unusual feelings. They've never managed them before. They're suddenly their stomach feels a certain way, their heart feels a certain way. It must be absolutely frightening. Or perhaps they're witnessing a mother or a father for the first time, watching them grieve, and to see their parents collapse or show another sign of them of their personality, another part of their life. It must be horribly frightening for some kids. And I hope that this book can speak to them as they experience their own loss, or perhaps as they witness someone else's loss. I think it's a very It's a book that's from the heart. It doesn't pretend that there isn't grief, that it doesn't pretend that it doesn't hurt. It tries to connect in very simple ways, you know, one generation to another generation, and reach in a community that's composed of people connected. So I sort of think it touches on all those themes in a very nice way.
What are you doing to promote the book? Are you doing any book signings or things like that?
I'm doing some local book signings. I'm in the Boston area. Peter and his brother actually own a little bookstore, among the many things that they do, a little bookstore called The Blue Bunny, if you want to Google that. We did an autographing there. I think they actually still have autographed coffees in stock. And then I happen to be doing a Barnes & Noble autographing tomorrow evening. But otherwise, we're really seeking reviews. I think this is a review-driven book. I think it's important that it be in school libraries and public libraries, that it finds its way perhaps to the bookshelf of counselors and of clergy. And, you know, it's difficult in the book publishing business to put a lot of books in a bookstore and sort of hope it meets some sort of commercial success, you know, like a hot adult fiction bestseller. I think that this needs to find endorsement from people that carry a voice, and I think that's reviewers. So, as I mentioned, we had the nice review in Kirkus. We've had the nice review in Publishers Weekly. We had a very nice review by yourself, I believe, and we've had some nice reviews on Amazon, and I think we're going to continue to find those. I think that's how people are going to discover the book.
Right. You mentioned your website. Can you give us that address again?
Yeah, absolutely. The website is funbrain.com. Funbrain is, it'll ring a bell with many parents. It's perhaps one of the largest children's sites in the world. It originally published only games. When I began to manage it, I was really coming out of book publishing. I was interested in putting more than games on it and wanted to try some books and comic strips, some original fiction. And as I said, we had an extraordinary success when we published a book called The Diary of a Wimpy Kid on there, which went on to become one of the major sellers in the last 16 months. And if you go to funbrain.com, you'll see something called the Reading Arcade at the top of the home page. And if you click on that, you'll see there the several books that we offer, and you'll see Tessa's Tree there, and that's how you can also read it online.
I really like the idea of being able to see it online, and parents that are listening in, because I'm sure we don't have a huge number of you know, preschoolers and maybe grade one, grade two listening to this show. What I suggest you do is go to funbrain.com and take a look at this book and then buy the physical copy, because kids like things to hold. They don't like looking at computer screens. I'm pretty certain that that this is a book that you will want to pick up for your little one, even if you haven't had a loss. It's a great tool to teach a complex concept in a very understandable way, or understandable to a small child. Just splendid, splendid stuff. Is funbrain.com also the best place for people to order copies?
I would suggest, again, if you Google The Blue Bunny, which is in Dedham, Massachusetts, D-E-D-H-A-M. I'm sorry, I don't know the exact URL off the top of my head. That's a wonderful place to order books from. It's an independent store, and it's owned by the illustrator. As I said, they have autographed copies in sight. Otherwise, I would suggest go to your local bookstore. We'll hope they have it in stock. If not, they can easily get it, because, again, it is published by Harper, which does a wonderful job of distribution. And, of course, you can always get it from any online bookstore also.
You have spent many years in the publishing industry, so I can't resist this next question.
Okay.
When I was compiling my questions, I wasn't really sure about your background, and I was kind of thinking, well, maybe I'll ask this, maybe I won't. It's a technical question.
Okay.
I'm a bit strange.
Okay.
You might have gathered that. For over 6 years, I was involved in a project. It was teaching adults, but adults with very low literacy levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I did quite a bit of research. I wanted to be successful at what I was doing, and I was actually writing technical manuals, believe it or not, on computer subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And aiming it at grade 5, grade 6 level readers or less. So, high reliance on pictures rather than lots of words. And through my research and anecdotal data, albeit very unscientific, from my own personal experience, I really got into fonts and font sizes. I mean, it's a subject that only I could love.
Okay.
I can't think of anyone else I've ever met that's hung up on fonts and font sizes.
Okay.
You have serif versus sans serif, what point size to use. What is the font that you use in Tess's Tree? It's almost Comic Sans, but with a serif finish.
I have no idea what the font is. Is it not listed in the book? No, it's not. I will find that, and I will email it to you. If I've learned anything in publishing, it is to trust someone else's skills. And there's nothing better than a good book designer. There's nothing better than a good book salesperson or a good book publicist. And I really don't have a design eye. It was completely driven by Peter in terms of what his eye is. But I will find out that font, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've never been asked that question before.
No, and I'm quite embarrassed by not knowing the answer, and usually in an adult book I can go to the very final page and it'll tell me the font face, and it's not, you're right, it's not here in the book. So I'm going to have to find that out for you.
And I do have one minor gripe on the font.
Okay.
we're aimed... The book is aimed at young children who are not really, really good readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the G that you use is overly complex.
I'm looking at the G, and you're absolutely right. That's a most that's a very busy G.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's funny you mention that because, as I, the history of this project or whatever is that I just wrote it to write it, not think about getting published, and I never really tested it for vocabulary or tested its readability. I just wrote a story, and it's not been tested for words, etc. But I do have one anecdote. It did live online for quite a while. I never changed the word after we put it online, and it went down to Harper, and they published it. And one day I was in New York having lunch with my editor, and she just sort of mentioned that this is the first book that's ever come in that they've never changed not one word on. Not one word was changed by the editor on it.
Wow.
But, of course, at Harper, there are, books, there are more words on one page than there are in this total book. But I thought that was really interesting because it just sort of proved the process, that it was just written honestly, without trying to meet anyone else's standards, et cetera, and that it really rings true with kids. But I'll have to bring up that G some point if we ever get to the reprint.
<You're right.
laughs> And I can just hear Peter saying it. Who's this nut again that says he likes my work? Yeah.
Right.
I've lost my train of thought now. you mentioned that you were getting something like 40,000
yep.
hits per day, on the online version. Do you have any idea, how many times the book has been read online?
Oh my! I did at one point. I sort of lost track of it. That's really a fascinating thing that's excited me as a publisher to be publishing online, as we did with this book and we did with the Wimpy Kid book. Wimpy Kid book gets up to 60,000 kids a day read it. What's very exciting about the internet is that when you publish globally, so we have kids that will come over a period of a month. We'll have kids that come from over 70 countries to read this stuff. And they'll actually have their web browser set to over 90 different languages. I mean, they're reading it in English, but the web browser from which they link to us is set into another language. So it's really very exciting to be publishing online. And then the publishing industries, you might imagine, it's just sort of confused at this point what to do about digital publishing, what to do about Kindle and various things like that. Any transitions this full of concern. And when we first published the Wimpy Kid book, we proposed to a couple of publishers that they publish it, and they said, "No, well, you're going to have to take it offline." And we said, "No, that seemed crazy, because it's sort of like getting the rights to the Simpsons book and then demanding that silly show be taken off the air." So we wanted to keep it up there, and I really love publishing online because it's the most democratic publishing I've ever been involved in. It's the site is completely free. Any kid anywhere who's online can read our stories. They can read Tess's Tree. They don't have to belong to what I'm afraid is a rather exclusive part of the population that has a town with a really good library or has a school that's blessed with a good library. Those are becoming rarer, especially in this economy, or that are blessed with parents that actually introduce their children to a bookstore. Something like only one in 100 families ever enter a bookstore in a period of a year. So this is really a wonderful way to reach children. I don't have to rely on a sort of antiquated distribution system. And Peter and I felt very strongly when Harper called and offered us to publish the book, that this book remain online, that it be made available to every child online, and that we felt not only was it the right thing to do, but that it was also the right business proposition, that, as you had said earlier, kids can discover Tess's Tree online, but the ability to read it at home while cuddled in a bed or with their grandparents, on the back porch, is a completely different experience, and it should be enjoyed in both ways. The total number of readers, I'm going to guess, if I could do some math quickly in my head, it's say 50,000 a day times 12 for a year, times 30 times, 12 times. It's been up for about 4 years. I assume we're getting close to 1 million readers.
Oh, my. That's a lot of children.
It is, and it's a wonderful way to reach them and engage them and enrich their lives. I mean, our purpose of our website, it's very simple. It's to entertain, inform, and educate, and I think it's a wonderful way to do that. It's I love it as a publishing story. I love it as Tess's story. I love it as a children's book. It's been a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I think it's just amazing what you've done. Are you planning on writing more books along Tess's Tree lines?
That's a really good question. Peter and I would love to work together again. I have thought a lot about other stories, and when I think about them, they start to feel forced. It starts to feel like I'm writing another story to attach to test to maybe make some more money by doing yet another book, and I really am delighted in all the goodness that's around the way this story evolved, and so I think I'm just going to sit if another story ever naturally surfaces, and then great, and if not, we'll be delighted that this one happened.
Unfortunately, our time is up, and my producer is nagging in my ear to wrap this up. So, Jess, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk to us this morning, and I want to wish you every success with Tess's Tree. Although I think you already have the success.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, every success with funbrain.com. It sounds like a fascinating site. And
it is.
Yeah, and again, parents that are listening in, you know, we hear a lot about the downside of the Internet. Well, here's the upside of the Internet. You know, get your kid in front of the family computer and show them funbrain.com. They might just, hog the computer.
There you go.
Jess, again, thank you for
thank
taking
you very
time.
Much.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.